So I think first and foremost, your question spoke to both rising gas and housing prices at the same time as proposal for universal basic income. And I think this is an important point when we're discussing how to address the cost, the rising cost of living and some of the challenges in our community. So we've all seen an increase in prices across the board, particularly in gas, food, and housing. Some of this was inevitable because of the pandemic, but a lot of this, our studies have shown that a lot of this came from the rather reckless and untargeted approach that the current Liberal government took towards spending and economic stimulus during the pandemic. As anybody who's taken any time to think about monetary policy, our own Prime Minister obviously has not, as he's admitted, that recognizes that money in and of itself is not wealth. The wealth of this country is our the goods we manufacture and the services we provide. So as much as it may have been necessary to provide some direct economic stimulus support to Canadians during the pandemic, the Liberal government at present is rolling this into an ongoing policy of direct cash handouts to the population, even to those who don't need it, and with very little targeted support to key areas that are going to get this country back on a path of economic growth. The result of this kind of reckless spending and the deficits in gender is inflation. And so while people may feel good and may feel their government is looking out for them by providing direct support, in fact, the value of that support becomes progressively less the more is handed out. And so, I may feel good that I have $100 today, but because of that $100 from the government today, what used to cost me $100 may cost me $150 or $200 in the future. So while I have my $100, the purchasing power of my dollar is eroded. And this is particularly relevant for low and middle income Canadians, those of us whose wages may not keep pace with inflation, seniors who may be on fixed incomes, anybody whose income is not rising with inflation, who doesn't have significant housing or stock assets, is going to see their purchasing power eroded by the Liberal NDP approach of let's just hand out money. The Conservatives, on the other hand, recognize that it's the manufacture of goods and the provision of services that is the engine of wealth creation for economy, not government redistribution. And so our plan is different from the other parties insofar as we are looking very carefully with a real lens of research and discipline to where can we direct government resources, because we do need to commit some resources to regrowing our economy to get our country back on track. But how can we direct them to areas where we're going to see a net return, where we're not just going to see the money disappear in untargeted ways and generate runaway inflation as we've seen, causing rising gas prices, rising housing prices, and a general erosion of working Canadians' purchasing power, but how can we get better jobs, better opportunities, a lower cost of living by producing things locally, not relying on supply chains that involve slave labor in China and places like that, but really trying to reshore manufacturing, reshore innovation, and provide a great economic stimulus to get us back on a growth track and to provide the kind of well-paying, secure jobs that Canadians need. At the same time, we're going to look at targeted measures to make sure that should Canadians fall on hard times or suffer hardship or economic loss, that the government is able to step in a way that's appropriate to the kinds of jobs and challenges of the modern economy and of Canada today post-pandemic. So that includes things like doubling the Canada workers' benefit up to a maximum of $2,800 for individuals or $5,000 for families to pay as a quarterly direct deposit rather than a tax refund at year-end. So that people are getting the money directly when they need it. This is going to put an average of extra $1,000 into the pocket of the most vulnerable workers and helping 3.5 million families put food on the table. So, for example, we'll be giving someone making $20,000 per year a $1 an hour raise. We'll also double the disability supplement from $744 to $1,500. This will help almost 90,000 disabled Canadians get the support they need. I've already mentioned the hiring incentives, pay 25 to 50% of wages for employers who hire Canadians who've been unemployed for up to 6 months during the pandemic, and it scales up depending on how long they've been unemployed. We're also going to ensure that Canadian workers get a real voice and the support they need against major multinational corporations. We're going to give workers a say at the table by mandating that all federally regulated employers with over 1,000 employees or $100 million in annual revenue include worker representation on their boards of directors. This is going to level the playing field between unions and multinationals by consulting with union leaders and then implementing changes to the Canada Labor Code to prevent remove barriers and prevent unions from organizing large employers with a history of anti-labor activity. So we also want to ensure that workers have the training they need. We're going to have to increase apprenticeship opportunities across the country, particularly for women who've been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic job losses. We recognize that the important thing for the federal government to be doing as we move forward into Canada's economic recovery plan is to ensure that there are good jobs, that we get back on a growth track. We're not relying on government handouts and the runaway inflation and runaway deficit spending that generates. So the good jobs are there, that people have the kinds of protections they need for the modern economy, particularly for good gig workers. We're going to revamp EI to make sure that it covers gig workers with the precarity of their jobs, to ensure that employers pay into a fund that's available to any gig workers who may need to change jobs or have temporary job losses, to ensure they have the support they need. Finally, by providing increased worker benefits, we're going to ensure that the lowest, most vulnerable lowest income Canadians have additional support from the government in a reliable way, in a timely way, so that they're getting quarterly support rather than having to wait for their tax returns at year end.